Some say reliable babysitters don't exist. Others claim they've seen one, but they don't live nearby anymore. The truth, they do exist, and Sitter City helps you find them fast.
No more last-minute panic, no more unreliable sitters. Sitter City makes it easy to find real, trustworthy childcare fast.
Background checks, ID verification, real parent reviews, so you know if someone has a history of ghosting families.
And their customer service? Real people, not mystery bots. Plus, your employer might even cover Sitter City for free.
Some mysteries take years to solve. Others, like who's watching the kids tonight, should take seconds. Sitter City makes sure of that.
Visit SitterCity.com today because a good sitter shouldn't be a mystery.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
What is up, everybody?
And welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 301. I'm your host, Kendall.
And I'm your host, Josh.
And today, you're just going to be hearing from us because Janelle is sick. Poor thing. She's, I think, got what you had a few weeks
ago.
It's been
that's
like
what
going around the
like,
office.
Where you just got a serious cough, chest congestion,
yeah,
voice going out.
Yeah, she sounded bad when I talked to her yesterday. But Corelli is here today from the sesh. She's going to be running cameras for us. But today we have a case that actually is pretty recent, and a lot of information has sort of surfaced recently.
Well, not publicly necessarily through the news media.
Yeah, that's true.
We had to dig deep to find a lot of this information and kind of piece this case together.
Yeah, it's a strange one.
Yeah, there was some initial coverage when Chelsea Grimm is who we're talking about today, when she disappeared. Yeah. In Arizona. And this case reminds me a lot of the Daniel Robinson case. Kind of similar location, cars found abandoned, belongings there, but no sign. I mean, she literally vanished, it seems, off the face of the earth.
Yeah, it does feel that way.
So, you know, we've really dug deep to try to piece together all the information. There was some News Nation coverage on this case about 6 months ago, but really there hasn't been all that much awareness spread out there since then. So
I'm not sure any other news agencies, networks that have covered it at all. News Nation's really become the leader in missing persons coverage or true crime coverage. And they'll talk about cases that aren't, you know, as highly publicized. Like they seem to really do a good job of seeking out cases that aren't getting enough coverage and trying to help with those. So shout out to News Nation. I'm a big fan. Yeah, this one is super bizarre, guys. A lot of twists and turns and just strange things leading up to her disappearing that could potentially give us clues, but nothing that solidifies, you know, any certain theory in our minds.
We'll There's a lot of theories to this one.
Yeah.
And obviously, when talking about rural Arizona, you know, we always have to mention this idea of these groups, communes, cults, whatever you want to call them, that we know exist out in the middle of nowhere throughout Arizona. And is it possible she disappeared and joined one of those groups? Again, we'll get into the evidence for and against that, but it's just really strange to think about how many people who have gone missing, who may have left on their own accord, and perhaps the family or others feel, you know, something nefarious may have happened to them, which again, definitely still a possibility.
Yeah, of course.
But I think it's just when you start digging into how many of these cults and groups exist in the United States and you start uncovering.
It's a lot.
Just the sheer magnitude of it's crazy because there's so many, and we'll talk about a specific one in this episode as well that you've probably never heard of. I know we certainly didn't know about this one, but
it's something you definitely got to factor in, especially when you consider how many groups there are. And it's just, you know, statistically, a lot of the people that have gone missing in this country have got to be still out there in these groups.
Right. And oftentimes these groups make you leave everything behind, all your belongings. You can't tell
you from
anybody.
Your family.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Love is Wan cult right here in Colorado. We've been to the area where they were based.
Around Crestone, yeah.
So it's definitely a possibility that I think gets overlooked.
Mm-hmm. It's more prominent than people realize. Mm-hmm. But yeah, of course, it's definitely not the only possibility. We're going to look at a couple of options here and go through all of the facts. And with this case, we are dealing with a lot of time gaps and strange police interactions. And there's very little hard evidence once she actually went missing. A lot of what we're going to be speaking on is the events in her life leading up to her going missing and possible sightings and things like that.
Yeah.
But for clarity's sake, we're going to front load the episode with all the confirmed facts and evidence and then kind of work our way back through the different theories, potential sightings, and strange characters that wandered through the desert in Arizona. But let's start with a background on Chelsea. Chelsea Grimm was born to Janet and Stephen Grimm in Connecticut on March 22nd, 1991. She had at least one sister and was described as an East Coast girl by her friends and family. While Chelsea was always super friendly and had a super flourishing social life, she also did struggle with depression and actually really made that struggle known to her friends and family. She was always very open about her issues, and her parents said that she would often change her plans or make split-second decisions based on her emotional state. In 2008, her parents sent her to a wilderness camp near Mesa, Arizona, which would be her first time in the state. And while we can't actually confirm which camp this was, given our episode on the troubled teen industry, obviously we just covered that. If you missed it, we'll link it below. We looked into the Anasazi Foundation, which is likely the camp that Chelsea attended. Like we said, we're not exactly sure, but from sort of what we gathered, it seems like that's a good possibility, which that camp is a nonprofit, which is a good sign. But on the other hand, there have been several stories of abuse within the camp since the 1980s. And Ruby Frankie, I'm sure many of you are familiar with her. That's
crazy.
Psycho.
Crazy case.
Nut job. The eight passengers' mother. They had a family vlog channel. I'm sure most of you have heard of it, but yeah. They were big on YouTube. And for years, people were pointing out something is wrong here. These people need to be reported to CPS. And massive amounts of abuse were going on. And that, I think the trial just wrapped up, right?
I believe so, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah. I kind of had to tune out of it because it got really, really dark and upsetting.
Yeah. Some say reliable babysitters don't exist. Others claim they've seen one, but they don't live nearby anymore. The truth, they do exist, and Sitter City helps you find them fast.
No more last-minute panic, no more unreliable sitters. Sitter City makes it easy to find real, trustworthy childcare fast.
Background checks, ID verification, real parent reviews, so you know if someone has a history of ghosting families.
And their customer service? Real people, not mystery bots. Plus, your employer might even cover Sitter City for free.
Some mysteries take years to solve. Others, like who's watching the kids tonight, should take seconds. Sitter City makes sure of that.
Visit sittercity.com today because a good sitter shouldn't be a mystery. But the reason we bring that up is she actually had sent her oldest son, Chad, to Anasazi. And we can't confirm Chelsea's individual experience with it or if it was even the camp she attended, like we said. However, we do know that these programs can really exacerbate behavioral and mental issues in young people. And we know that through this program, Chelsea familiarized herself with Northern Arizona or became accustomed to outdoor living, whether she was in that program or something else. She went to some camp out in Northern Arizona. After that, she finished high school at a wilderness boarding school in Montana. Again, only a little is known about her time there. One of her lifelong friends from the school said that, quote, "We went through a lot of things there," though she didn't really explain much past that. But again, it certainly hardened her wilderness experience. But her friends didn't describe her as the outdoorsy type necessarily. She knew what to do in those scenarios, but was really a city girl at heart. But it was also in Montana that Chelsea began her passion for photography. This was a huge passion of hers. She loved nature shots, sunsets, and photos of locals, which it's really interesting. She would call these people that she would photograph the forgotten people of America. And it would really become like the central theme of her photography. She studied social work at NYU and received her master's in 2019. She always wanted to help others who dealt with the same issues that she did and saw social work as a way to give back to others. She worked as a 12th grade social worker and therapist through the NYC Department of Education and got in her first serious relationship around that time as well. She met her first long-term boyfriend near the beginning of her first year of college, and the two of them stayed together until around 2020.
So as we know, 2020, a year that we'll never forget, right?
Never.
Unfortunately. Mm. This is when the pandemic hit, yep. And Chelsea's work really seemed to cease altogether, at least was very limited once all the high schools transitioned to remote learning. And it was at this point that she got involved with a musician producer, and the two of them moved to Ocean Beach in San Diego, California. And in Ocean Beach, Chelsea focused on her photography and picked up social work with teenagers in the area. She lived in a quaint house near the beach, and life seemed pretty good. But still, she had those underlying mental health issues, and once she broke up with the music producer, and he moved back to New York, she really didn't have many friends. In 2022, she became romantically involved with Philip Brenner, more commonly known as PJ. He was a country musician with a pet bearded dragon named Roxy. He did street performances around Venice Beach and declared himself a famous musician. In reality, he was perpetually unemployed and soon leached off of Chelsea. He lived in her apartment, he drove her car, and he began to expect her to care for his bearded dragon, Roxy. A next-door neighbor also alleged that PJ sold meth out of her place, and they would do the drug when they were together. Chelsea ended up taking out a restraining order against this neighbor, saying he was getting too up in their business, so you can take this neighbor's word with a grain of salt. PJ at least was indeed involved with meth and was monitored by the San Diego Police Department's narcotics division throughout the years. During this time, Chelsea took another wilderness retreat to northern Arizona, where she made many friends that even her longtime loved ones had never met. When she returned to Ocean Beach, PJ became physically and emotionally abusive towards Chelsea, and she told her parents that after she tried to break off things with him, he proceeded to stalk her. She also took out a restraining order against him in the days leading up to the road trip, which we'll talk about. Chelsea had taken ownership of Roxy the Bearded Dragon following her breakup with PJ, but still, PJ was texting and calling her all the time, and she was fearful that he was stalking her. In September 2023, Chelsea planned to meet her parents in Connecticut before they all attended a wedding in late September or early October. She tried to book a flight, but the airline wouldn't allow her to bring Roxy with her. While it's unclear if she wanted Roxy in order to just protect the animal from PJ or for emotional support, she needed to bring the bearded dragon with her. So Chelsea ended up telling her parents that she would drive to Connecticut instead, and she'd camp along the way, taking photos for a project on the Forgotten People of America. Plus, this would allow her to take Roxy with her. This would be an intense undertaking. I mean, a cross-country trip, even for an experienced road tripper, is no joke. We're talking 2,860 miles of road between San Diego and Connecticut.
Yeah, that's a serious road trip.
Yeah, 43 hours without stops of just driving.
Crazy.
The longest road trip we've taken would have been North Carolina to Denver.
Yeah.
Driving, which that was...
We took a lot of breaks.
Yeah, we did. We took a lot of stops for that one.
Yeah, I don't think I could do much longer than that. That was a lot for me.
Originally, Chelsea planned to spend time with her sister and friends in Arizona. And then from there, she would book it for Connecticut.
So she left San Diego on September 24th, 2023, and arrived in Arizona on September 27th. Now, this time gap is already a little suspect, as driving from San Diego to Arizona typically takes like 7 hours tops. So nobody knows where she was or what she did for those 3 days. She did meet with a longtime friend for lunch on the 27th and planned to have lunch with her again the next day along with her sister. Then hours later, she parked at a hotel in Seligman, Arizona, and she was clearly distraught. She called her mom and said that she wouldn't make it to Connecticut. Chelsea said that she would briefly see her sister the next day, drive around Arizona, and then just head home. She said that she was worried that PJ had stalked her out there and felt like she was on the run. Then she asked her mom if she could pay for her to go to Canyon Ranch Resort for rest and potentially rehabilitation. However, her mom said no, and the two of them got in some type of fight over this. Chelsea said that if she tried to call her again, she wouldn't have service and would let her mom know when she returned to Ocean Beach. When her mom called throughout the week, it went straight to voicemail. Then she called her sister and canceled those lunch plans for the following day. And when her sister called later, it also went straight to voicemail. Now, this didn't seem super unusual because Chelsea was not only in a rural area and, you know, driving through several rural areas, but she had also blocked family members before when she was feeling emotional, and she would unblock them eventually when her emotions had stabilized and sort of explained the situation. Anyway, then she entered the hotel lobby and requested a room, and she actually had tried to pay in euros that she had left over from a backpacking trip across Europe. And she explained to the owner that she was avoiding an abusive ex and wanted to stay, quote, off the grid.
I was going to say, because a lot of people point out this fact that she tried to pay for a hotel here in the U.S. with euros is like potentially a marker of her mental state. But what do you think about that? Do you think she, like, I don't know, because the average person, you know, you can't use euros here. Like you.
Yeah.
So why would she have tried to use euros to pay for?
I think it was just a last ditch effort because she had tried to get financial help from her mom. She said no. And I don't know what her personal financial situation, but it seemed like this was all she had. So she was just like, may as well try and see if they take it.
Some say reliable babysitters don't exist. Others claim they've seen one, but they don't live nearby anymore. The truth, they do exist, and Sitter City helps you find them fast.
No more last-minute panic, no more unreliable sitters. Sitter City makes it easy to find real, trustworthy childcare fast.
Background checks, ID verification, real parent reviews, so you know if someone has a history of ghosting families.
And their customer service? Real people, not mystery bots. Plus, your employer might even cover Sitter City for free.
Some mysteries take years to solve, others, like who's watching the kids tonight, should take seconds. Sitter City makes sure of that.
Visit sittercity.com today because a good sitter shouldn't be a mystery. But the owner of the hotel asked for her phone number and she started to give it to him, but then she stopped and said, quote, oh, that doesn't matter because I threw out my SIM card, which is a big thing to note. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. Obviously, she did not want to be in communication with people if she threw it out. And was concerned about PJ as well.
Yeah, well, it makes sense too, because then she ends up handing him her debit card, and it seems like it's a tracking thing. She's worried that he's maybe watching her accounts or something, and so maybe that's why she was trying to use the euros, because it's, you know, can't be traced back to her.
Right after she handed him the debit card, she bails. She said, I don't think this is a good idea, and then left the hotel. So she didn't end up even staying there. And then on September 28th, around 8:30 p.m., a police officer in Williams, Arizona, responded to a suspicious vehicle parked near the cemetery. And he found Chelsea sitting inside, clearly very emotional. We actually have a clip here.
Yeah, let's take a look at this footage. You can't really see her. This is from, obviously, the police's body cam.
Yeah.
But you can tell from her voice, and her parents have confirmed that this is her voice and her car.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
The interaction lasts about 7.5 minutes.
I'm doing great. Are you doing all right?
Yeah.
And shows 32-year-old Chelsea Grimm just a few days before reportedly disappearing.
I just was doing a photo shoot of the lost soldiers and got a little emotional, so crying before I got back on the road.
The body cam footage from September 28th was taken by Williams police, who responded to a call of suspicious activity at the Williams Cemetery.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're quite all right. I mean,
I was just doing a photo shoot, yeah.
At one point, the officer asks her if she has a hotel to stay at, and she says she didn't.
I don't. I was actually thinking of just camping for the night, but I wasn't really sure exactly yet.
Gotcha.
Well, I didn't plan to be here till sunset.
So that clip came from a local news station. However, it's cut down quite a bit. We do have a full version of it, which there's a lot of parts in it that, you know, aren't really important to watch, I guess. But it does come from another podcast, if you're curious about the watermark on it, which I'm not sure why it's watermarked, because it's not owned footage. It's public domain. So we're going to watch some of it. It comes from, what is this podcast? LTL True Crime Podcast.
Series on the lost and the forgotten people in this country.
Yeah, no, I get it. How long ago did you smoke marijuana?
Oh, hours and hours ago.
Okay, right on.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, just hang tight for me really fast and I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
I won't be much of a bother. She said she smoked marijuana like a couple hours ago. I don't really see signs of impairment, but I don't really know how to look for it all that well for marijuana. I mean, she's not doing anything. She just took some photo shoots of the soldier memorial, and she said she's getting pretty emotional about it. So she just decided to, just to like hang out and cool down, and because she's crying.
I assume he's calling his supervisor.
Yeah.
Maybe call someone else to drive, especially because you're in a fragile state. And say, but if you are driving and I do see impaired behavior, now it's said to me that you smoke marijuana. I don't want to get into that, so I would encourage you to find someone else who could come drive for you. Or just walk and give her a PA ride to her hotel or whatever, if this car is safe, at least, you know.
Yeah, okay, it is.
But there's nothing we can do to force her to do anything at this point.
So. I got you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Sounds like a newer officer.
So it was September 9th, so no big deal. Okay. I just wanted to let you know, bring it to your attention. Yeah. Here's your driver's license
back. Thank you.
I know you told me that you smoked marijuana and you're kind of, obviously I would be in an emotional state as well. I don't know if you want somebody else to drive you or if you just want to hang out here for a little bit longer. You're more than welcome to do that.
Yeah, if it's okay with you if I hang out here for another like 15 or 20 and then head on the road, that would be fun,
sure.
I think.
Yeah, I don't see any signs of impairment or anything like that. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, with my eyesight and then crying, it's not the best combination at night.
I totally
I was like,
understand.
I'm just going to like cry on the road or I'm just going to sit here and cry. So
I got
have
you.
My dragon and I'm just.
Oh, like, that's freaking cool. I didn't even notice that.
Thanks, Rosie.
Wow, Rosie.
I think she's asleep.
Wow. Right on.
She got poured.
Yeah. Do you have like a hotel around here or anything?
I don't. I was actually thinking of just camping for the night, but I wasn't really sure exactly yet.
Gotcha.
Well, I didn't plan to be here till sunset.
Okay. You can't camp in the city limits. It's kind of like a city statute we have.
Okay, good.
But you can always go. I don't know if you can see like the yellow lights over there, the Loves. It's a trucker stop and in the gas station area, you can just sleep there. Nobody will bother you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
Get some good shots at sunrise too there.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sunrise here too. If you ever want to take photo shoots of like the statues in the morning, dude, it's really cool because the sun's like rises right behind them.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll probably stay at the truck stop then, save some money and then come over for the sunrise.
You got it.
Cool.
All right. Well you have a great time. I'm Blake.
Thanks, Blake.
You got it.
Appreciate your compassion.
You got it. So yeah, just hang out here however long you want. And you're good to go.
Awesome.
And then take care of registration, obviously, because
I could do that online.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Because
hey, honey,
if like a county stops you, they're not going to be as nice as me. They're dicks. So. Okay.
Thank
cool.
You.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah,
have a great
cool
rest of your day.
Yeah, she had such a cool energy about her too.
Yeah.
So just to go over that footage, if it was kind of hard to hear or if you're listening and didn't actually see it, first of all, you probably heard the bearded dragon being named as Rosie. I guess the bearded dragon had two names, Rosie and
Rosie.
As
all of our pets do, right?
Yes. Went by multiple names. So the officer had asked her if she had smoked marijuana, and she said she did earlier in the day, and he warned her that her registration was expired, but told her to renew it ASAP. He asked if she had a hotel and she said she planned to go camping. Then he informs her that camping within the city limits was illegal, but she'd be safe to sleep at the Love's truck stop nearby. And then he kind of, you know, tells her about how cool this photography would look in the morning during the sunrise. So she says, okay, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, and that she's probably going to go sleep at the truck stop. So then on September 30th, Chelsea was seen camping out by her car on a rural dirt road near Ash Fork. And she posted this strange photo. Now, if you're listening, it's weird because she's barefoot. She's holding a bouquet of flowers. It looks like she just picked wildflowers in the area. And then she has her car off in the distance. It's sort of focused on the flowers, but it's sort of blurred out. It's just a kind of a strange photo, yeah. But the car in the background has three of the doors open, both the driver's and passenger, and then the backseat door on the left side as well. But what's strange too is this area, you know, she's barefoot and it's known to have like stinging weeds. So it's not really a place that you would want to walk around barefoot. And her clothes also seem to be strewn about in the background. So we don't know if she was wearing clothes, if she was kind of having a in touch with nature,
yeah,
to the nth
that's
degree
kind of, what I'm
kind of moment, like
yeah.
Just feeling free, which is cool. But yeah, it is a little bit weird. And she's kind of like holding her foot out to show that she's barefoot. Maybe she's really trying to capture that she's having this free moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it kind of looks that way. I mean, obviously, we don't know for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I feel like a lot of us would try to like set up our phone or our camera or something on top of something in order to get like an actual picture.
Well,
of
if she's
us.
Naked, she probably doesn't want a picture.
Well, if it's just for her, then why not? You know?
Well, plenty of reasons why not. You want me to go through?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that's what I would do. But
is it?
Sure.
You want your phone getting hacked and then people find your...
No, her camera. Like, she had her actual DSLR camera with her. True. That's what I'm talking about. It's like, put it on a timer. Like, we've done that on trips where you have a tripod or something like that.
Not everyone wants naked photos of themselves.
True. True.
I think she's more just, like, capturing this as a memory for herself. But I don't know.
I don't
she's
necessarily...
clearly very deep out there, you know?
I don't necessarily think there's anything, like, eerie or really suspicious about this photo
to me. It's a little strange, but she could have been... smoking more and just like feeling the moment.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I get from it.
Yeah.
But anyway, later that day, a woodcutter named George Robertson pulled over and he had noticed that she had been parked there for 5 hours. He asked her if she was okay. And she said that she was just camping in the area and taking photographs. She told him, quote, "You just missed a beautiful sunset." It was raining, so they were both in their cars and he could not see into her vehicle. And their conversation only lasted a few minutes. George was driving with a retired Phoenix police officer who actually spoke to her for a little while longer, but it's strange. We have no idea what was said in that conversation. It's actually unclear if police even got his statement.
Came back out, was right at dark, just starting to rain, and she was still parked there. So we asked her if she had any trouble. She said, "No, we're fine." She said, "I'm just taking pictures, and you just missed a beautiful sunset."
So you... she was at her vehicle at noon. You go in and cut wood. You're coming back, and she's still at her vehicle.
Okay. Which is strange, too, because he was an officer, so you'd think they would do that. But, I mean, they may have, and we just...
Yeah, or they just thought it was just an innocent conversation. There's nothing to report, necessarily, right?
Like, yeah, but it's like, obviously, with a missing person, you...
Yeah, the police
should
go. Should go.
And they may have. Anybody. We're not sure if they did or not. It's just not public if they did. But they pulled out and left Chelsea there, and she seemed okay. They said she didn't seem to be in a super emotional state or in a manic state or anything like that. He described her as a little eccentric, but pretty normal. And they did not notice her bearded dragon, but also keep in mind it was raining and they were just talking through their cars. Couldn't see into the vehicle, so I'm guessing Roxy was somewhere in the back. But George did not notice if the vehicle seemed to have any issues or flat tires. He said it looked normal and that she was just taking shelter inside from the rain. What's strange is that this road led to the main highway, while other roads nearby were extremely rough and required high off the ground four-wheel vehicles to remain safe.
Yeah, it looks like a bunch of dirt roads, either county roads or private roads, perhaps. We're not exactly sure. But on October 4th, after Chelsea had not spoken to them for days, her parents reported her missing. They knew that she'd be without cell service for some time, and
some say reliable babysitters don't exist. Others claim they've seen one, but they don't live nearby anymore. The truth, they do exist, and Sitter City helps you find them fast.
No more last-minute panic, no more unreliable sitters. Sitter City makes it easy to find real, trustworthy childcare fast.
Background checks, ID verification, real parent reviews, so you know if someone has a history of ghosting families.
And their customer service? Real people, not mystery bots. Plus, your employer might even cover Sitter City for free.
Some mysteries take years to solve. Others, like who's watching the kids tonight, should take seconds. Sitter City makes sure of that.
Visit SitterCity.com today because a good sitter shouldn't be a mystery.
Maybe she even blocked them, but they felt that this was plenty of time for her to return home to San Diego and give them a call back. What they didn't know was that Chelsea had thrown out her SIM card. On October 5th, hunters in Kaibab National Forest, just north of where Chelsea was seen camping by George Robertson, reported that her Ford Escape appeared to be abandoned. The area had been heavily trafficked as hunting season had just started, and the hunters had noticed the car the day before with two flat tires on the right side. They didn't call it in at that point because they felt like, you know, I don't want to rush to judgment here. Let's give the owner some time to find help and, you know, get their car out of there. But they did feel it was strange to leave it there for a full day with many of that owner's belongings still inside. So police officers responded to the abandoned car around 6:05 a.m. on October 6th. And this road that the car was on was rougher than the one she'd been camping on when George Robertson spoke to her. This road is lined by jagged lava rocks, but it was still relatively close to the main highway, and it's not impossible that Her vehicle could not have made it onto the pavement, even with two flat tires, before being abandoned. And again, there were numerous hunters in the area, and no one had seen who the car had belonged to. Officers did observe that Chelsea had taken Roxy, her bearded dragon, with her, her wallet, driver's license, and a sleeping bag, and then locked the vehicle. But inside of the car was still her tent and camera, which everybody that knows Chelsea kind of thought that was weird. They'd be like, why would she leave with all these other things and not bring her camera with her? I mean, that's literally what she was on the strip for, was to take photographs. And also, if she's planning to leave the vehicle, walk somewhere to camp, you know, she brought her sleeping bag with her, why wouldn't she bring her tent as well? So definitely a little odd. An extensive search of a 3-mile radius surrounding Chelsea's car took place, and Chelsea's family hired private investigator Kelly Townsend to help them look for Chelsea. Dozens of Chelsea's closest friends and family, including PJ, traveled to Arizona to aid in the search. Now, PJ really fucked this whole thing up. Not only did he withhold information about Chelsea's mental state and their relationship before the trip, but he refused to be interviewed by the cops or Kelly Townsend, but still wanted to lead the search and rescue mission. Not only that, he posted on social media for clout and even tried to make a bogus GoFundMe, which are all red flags. PJ had his friend Elias Aviando, who was only an acquaintance of Chelsea, post a GoFundMe for him. In it, he described himself as Chelsea's fiance, said that she had run out of gas, which has never been reported anywhere, and set a goal of $30,000 to help him with the search. Luckily, Chelsea's family told everyone not to donate to the GoFundMe and that PJ was exploiting Chelsea's disappearance for money. Elias promised to take the posting down and even fought with PJ when he learned the truth. However, the GoFundMe is not down and it's still up there, so do not donate to it. PJ then used the very few donations he did receive in order to purchase a bus ticket to Tennessee, where he ended up being arrested for a previous crime of trespassing, and it looks like he was released only a few months later. While cops received numerous tips about Chelsea's disappearance and potential sightings, they couldn't verify any of them. And after 2 weeks, the larger search was called off. And in the following month, Chelsea's missing persons posters were taken down. The search and rescue mission turned to a recovery mission, assuming that if they ever found her, it would be her remains. Kelly Townsend, the private investigator, is still working on the case. As of today, all of Chelsea's phone and debit card activity ceased before she was reported missing, and as of today, nothing has shown up yet, as far as we know. Chelsea's SUV was impounded a few months later. Her camera, tent, and any of her other belongings were discarded, and her, you know, according to one quote out there, this isn't coming directly from the family, so just take it for what it is, but they said that the family couldn't bear to sift through them, so that's why they were just discarded.
And this was, I believe, her landlord that said that. So,
yeah.
I mean, take it with a grain of salt, but.
Right.
Yeah, I know people will definitely have thoughts on.
Because it's like, why wouldn't you want to look through her belongings to see if there's any clues, right, to where she went?
Mm-hmm. Which I believe, I'm pretty sure that the police looked through. So it was searched and, you know, they went through to find clues and stuff, but her family didn't. Which, like, it's hard to judge anyone in that situation. Like, I could see how that would be extremely painful. It's kind of sad that no one wanted, especially her camera, and I think there were journals in there as well. But that's all very private stuff that maybe they felt like wasn't really their place to look at anyway after the police did. So I get it.
And eventually her white Ford Escape was sold with an asking price of $10,000. And on December 6, 2023, Chelsea's landlord moved all of her other things outside because her parents, quote, didn't have the capacity to move her things. And PJ, after being released from jail, had been squatting in her apartment. As of December, no one was looking for Chelsea. Hunting season had ended and only 3 people had been observed in the National Forest at the time by a private investigator. The Find Chelsea Facebook page has gone cold and there haven't been any new leads in her disappearance. The Sheriff's Department has also said that they haven't seen any evidence or signs of foul play in this case and that as of right now, it's just an open missing person case.
So before we discuss the potential theories, it's important to note that PJ was not directly involved in Chelsea's disappearance. While we don't know what happened for those first 3 days that Chelsea was on the road, and perhaps PJ was stalking her around the Southern California area before she eventually made it to Arizona, SDPD's narcotics division did monitor him for the days that Chelsea was in Arizona and observed him staying in Chelsea's home. So we know that, he wasn't involved. But still, Chelsea had told her parents that he had been stalking her and told the hotel owners in Seligman. that she hadn't slept in 9 days because of an abusive ex. And while we don't have phone records, it's probably safe to assume that PJ continued to harass her through calls and texts while she was in Arizona, and perhaps made her believe that he was on her tail.
Which would explain the throwing out of the SIM card.
Yeah, yeah, and not wanting to use the debit card. And
worried about him following her and tracking her
whereabouts. It seemed that way. Mm-hmm. But regardless, even though he wasn't involved in her disappearance, he's definitely not innocent in all of this in any way. He held back information from the police. He centered himself in the investigation and created that fake GoFundMe to exploit her disappearance. Elias claimed that even though PJ lied in the description, that he meant it, but $30,000 is quite a lot of money to ask for a private search and rescue mission. Clearly, there were other motives there. In the end of the day, he was responsible for abusing and manipulating Chelsea, which likely, I mean, I think it's safe to assume it did affect her mental health while in Arizona. And he may not have done the crime, but he is definitely culpable. I feel comfortable saying that. But let's talk about the tires. The two tires on the right side of her car were popped when police discovered her abandoned Ford Escape. They explicitly ruled out foul play because the tires did not appear to be slashed and the vehicle was locked. But theorists online have claimed that the tires were slashed and that police don't want to reveal that information. But honestly, that's pretty doubtful given everything else they have told the public. They've been pretty open for the most part. And that's kind of a weird thing to want to hide. Always a chance, but, you know, in our opinions, probably pretty unlikely. Also, there is a 1 in 10 million chance of two tires getting popped simultaneously. So it's extremely unlikely, but it's not impossible. The Ford Escape is a four-wheel drive vehicle, but not built for sustained off-roading.
No, and I was going to say, I actually have a lot of experience and knowledge around four-wheel drive vehicles as I drive one myself, and done a lot of research on tires. And one of the things with the stock vehicles is the tires are, you know, there's different plies for tires. So the thickness of the rubber of the tires and tires that come stock from the factory are usually very, very thin. And although it's an all-wheel drive vehicle, you get out on some of those county roads or forest roads, and it'd be very, very easy to pop your tires out there. And it would, you know, if it was two tires on the right side, perhaps she was on the edge, you know, driving along the edge where those lava rocks are, you could definitely pop both tires on sharp rock like that. So I don't think it's all that unlikely that she just popped it just pulling over to the side of the road or something.
Yeah.
And that slashing the tires, I don't know. I don't really see a lot of evidence for that. It seems,
especially since she hadn't changed them since purchasing the car, as far as we know.
So those are stock tires, and it'd be very easy to pop those on those kinds of roads, no problem.
Yeah, and she did drive a lot. She put 8,000 miles on the car in the year before her disappearance, which is 8 times as much as she did the year before. And this is probably because she became PJ's chaperone for that year. Besides the jagged lava rocks, like you mentioned, she would have driven over the train tracks before reaching the car's final destination. And again, it's like we said, it's improbable, but not impossible.
Not
it seems
impossible.
Like you really lean towards it being a real possibility.
What?
Of them both being popped.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
you would know better than me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's very likely based on the terrain and the actual roads there and the vehicle. Because, yeah, it's very easy to pop. That's why, you know, you go off-roading on any of these serious trails and you're bringing a spare. Even getting like 8-ply tires, real thick, off-road, big tread, you still bring a spare because...
But to pop one of them...
People pop two as well. Sometimes people carry two, especially out in places like this.
Yeah,
carry two spares just in case, because if you think about it, if she's driving along the side and one, because like how did one get popped, right? It was probably because she was veered. And if you look at the pictures of where her vehicle, where she would park, she'd pull off on the side of the road to take pictures or whatever.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And so both tires are going to end up on the side of the road. Yeah, is it a little, does it seem a little unlikely? Yeah, like I think if you looked at the probability around that, it's probably, you know, fairly low, but is it impossible? No. And I think with the vehicle, the fact she's been on this road trip, she's already been putting a lot of wear and tear on the tires, it is definitely a possibility for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense when you explain it like that.
Some say reliable babysitters don't exist.
Others claim they've seen one, but they don't live nearby anymore. The truth, they do exist, and Sitter City helps you find them fast.
No more last-minute panic, no more unreliable sitters. Sitter City makes it easy to find real, trustworthy childcare fast.
Background checks, ID verification, real parent reviews, so you know if someone has a history of ghosting families.
And their customer service? Real people, not mystery bots. Plus, your employer might even cover Sitter City for free.
Some mysteries take years to solve. Others, like who's watching the kids tonight, should take seconds. Sitter City makes sure of that.
Visit sittercity.com today because a good sitter shouldn't be a mystery. So this is kind of interesting. There is an unconfirmed tip, so we're not totally sure on this, from residents who lived off of a rougher road nearby that said Chelsea had crashed into their gully around 11 or 10 p.m. and that she seemed fine and asked for directions back to the main road. And cops couldn't confirm this because the car was in working order besides the tires, and it didn't seem like the car had been through a wreck. So some people online still really stick by the theory that her tires must have been slashed by opportunistic kidnappers who acted while Chelsea was camping. And it is important to note that human trafficking is an issue in that area, as it is in most of the country these days. So it's not impossible to assume that something awful could have happened there. But you got to think about the fact that, you know, why would these kidnappers take her sleeping bag, her phone, her driver's license, and her bearded dragon? It's a little strange. I mean, maybe the bearded dragon could have run away, but he was supposed to, or she was supposed to be going into hibernation soon and wouldn't really have the energy to get far away from the car. So it seems like someone would have taken her.
Yeah.
We're not exact. It's, yeah.
Which I mean, more so than the bearded dragon, I think the sleeping bag sticks out, because
yeah.
I could see why they would take the phone and yeah. driver's license
yes.
so that
mm-hmm.
there's no trace of that anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Potentially, there's always the possibility that they want to stage the scene
that's
to
true.
Make it look like she left on her own accord, but
yeah.
she was actually abducted.
Yeah.
Because these groups are very smart in the way that they do these things, so it's possible that that was their plan. I don't know how much other evidence really is for this theory of like...
No.
Kidnappers were following her. She walked away from her vehicle. They slashed her tire so she couldn't leave. When she comes back to the vehicle, they kidnap her mm-hmm. from there. And again, this is like pretty remote area. Mm-hmm. So,
but I mean,
still near a highway. So I guess there's this kind of stuff going on all the time.
Yeah. So it's
human
possible.
Smuggling.
It is
happens
possible.
All up and down this highway. So. Yeah, it's definitely a possibility.
I hope that's not the case, but yeah, definitely a possibility. And yeah, just a heads up to all of you animal lovers out there. We're not sure what happened to Roxy. To this day, we have no idea where she went or what could have happened to her, which is really sad.
You can assume that she went with Chelsea, wherever Chelsea went.
Which it is possible that Chelsea did go somewhere and took Roxy with her. So yeah, we don't know that anything bad happened or she ran away.
Well, the car was locked. When they found it abandoned. So how did Roxy just leave the vehicle?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's super weird.
So Roxy would have been dead in the vehicle had she not taken it, or whoever she left with hadn't taken the bearded dragon with her, because he's not there or she's not there.
Yeah.
So seems like she went wherever she went.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. Yeah.
But people also point to Chelsea's emotional state and that maybe the car breaking down tipped her over the edge. I mean, it sucks to get a flat tire, especially out where she's at. She doesn't have a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that could send anybody over the edge. Perhaps she left everything in a mental break and planned to just go off the grid. According to SF Investigates, a PI that helped on the case, despondents who don't want to be found often find a scenic location and hide away from those looking for them. However, in Chelsea's case, she sought out scenic locations to photograph them, yet she left her camera behind. The camera thing's very odd to me.
Yeah, it is.
Again, the land surrounding the road is very rocky and uneven. It was pitch black the night before Chelsea's car was first spotted, and she would have likely tripped and hurt herself if she just like up and left on foot. SF Investigates modeled 3 million square feet surrounding Chelsea's car and still couldn't find any sign of her. No clothes, no footprints, no other tire tracks, nothing at all. Which to me, if this was like a... abduction, right? There likely could have been some sort of struggle. I feel like there would have been maybe a few more signs of mm-hmm. something happening at her vehicle. as mm-hmm. well. How did these people get in there to slash the tires without leaving a trace on the ground or anything like that as well? So it's just something to keep in mind. In the early days of the investigation, Chelsea's friends pleaded for the authorities to investigate as if it were a criminal case. One friend even said that the only reason cops ruled out foul play was that because the car was locked. But again, there's no hard evidence to suggest that human trafficking or kidnapping played a role in her disappearance at all. The police maintain that the rough roads popped the tires, and improbable as it may seem, was entirely accidental. Some friends have said that the cops just don't want to cause a panic by saying the tires were slashed, but since they've been so open about all the other information they have in this case, it'd be very strange for them to withhold a major thing like the tires were clearly slashed. Because if you look at pictures of slashed tires, I mean, obviously you could like stab a knife into it, maybe it just looked like a puncture hole. But I feel like you can tell the difference between a knife going into a tire or some type of sharp tool versus like a rock or something. So if the police are saying that it was because of the rocky road that these tires were popped, I am going to have to go with that. And I think it's very, you know, I don't see any reason why they would lie about that. It seems very weird to withhold that kind of information.
Some say reliable babysitters don't exist. Others claim they've seen one, but they don't live nearby anymore. The truth, they do exist, and Sitter City helps you find them fast.
No more last-minute panic, no more unreliable sitters. Sitter City makes it easy to find real, trustworthy childcare fast.
Background checks, ID verification, real parent reviews, so you know if someone has a history of ghosting families.
And their customer service? Real people, not mystery bots. Plus, your employer might even cover Sitter City for free.
Some mysteries take years to solve. Others, like who's watching the kids tonight, should take seconds. Sitter City makes sure of that.
Visit sittercity.com today because a good sitter shouldn't be a mystery.
So let's talk about, is it possible that Chelsea had a mental break or episode of some sort? She was distraught while making the trip. She fought with her parents. She did try to pay in euros. She was crying at William Cemetery. Was there something that sent her over the edge that made her just run off into the night? Again, maybe it was her tires being popped. I mean, who really knows? But some have theorized that Chelsea left because Roxy, her bearded dragon, had died. You know, maybe she was driving down a rural road to find somewhere to bury her. She got flat tires and then continued on foot. Maybe when she left, she intended to return, so she left her camera behind and locked the car. But while out there, she either got lost or just decided to abandon the vehicle and keep moving. Improper temperature is one of the leading causes of death for a bearded dragon, especially as Roxy was preparing to hibernate while on the trip. Camping in the Arizona desert would make temperature regulation nearly impossible. If you've ever been out to Arizona, you know it can get very, very hot during the day, but the nights do get very, very cold, especially in the desert. Or often bearded dragons can die from impaction, which is when they swallow something too large to digest properly. This can be a rock, a stick, or even a large insect, and death from impaction is quick and very sudden. If we look back at that photo that some think looks strange that Chelsea posted, we see that she's carrying flowers and all the doors are open to her vehicle. Roxy's in most of her photos, and if she left the car doors open, is she potentially worried about Roxy hopping out and escaping? I think from what I know about bearded dragons is that they're pretty chill. Like they'll just sit there for hours and hours and hours.
And so, she could have had like a carrier or something to keep her contained, or I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Or maybe she was just airing out the vehicle, you know.
Or was holding her in the photo for all we know.
Right, right. It's just hard to say. Of course, this is certainly possible, but it wouldn't explain Chelsea's behavior in the days before her disappearance, especially when Roxy was seen with her alive. Of course, Chelsea wanted to attend a resort to deal with her headspace the last time she spoke to her mother. She had participated in a camp the year before and made friends with people her loved ones had never met. Is it possible that she met up with one of those friends and went somewhere together?
So as we mentioned in the beginning of the episode, one thing that we've just learned over the years covering different cases and researching this one specifically is that this area specifically is full of new age cults and communes. Even just skimming like YouTube comments and Reddit threads will show many locals who talk about the cults that they know about near Ash Fork that promised spiritual well-being through some sort of retreat or commune. So that brings up the idea that maybe Chelsea met someone involved in one of these organizations or met up with a friend after her car broke down. Again, this could be a stretch. We're not really sure. If she was open with her friends and family about needing help before, why wouldn't she, you know, contact them to let them know if she was somewhere safe? Not really sure. But people do that. And like we said, people will kind of be forced to disconnect from their family and friends. It's hard to understand, but if you end up in one of these situations, that's really what they want to stay hidden. So,
well, I think the bigger question here is, if we consider that theory, was this the plan the entire time?
Yeah.
Or did the plans change because her vehicle was disabled?
Or because she ran into someone who...
Right. Or talked her into it, or maybe a friend was like, hey, come stay with me, and then she brought her there. I mean, the possibilities are endless, but that's the only thing that really trips me up about mm-hmm. that is like, why, unless the popping of the tires was intentional,
yeah,
and it was kind of all part of the plan the entire time.
It might be.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, and we have to think about the fact that when she was at the hotel, she had said that she wanted to get off the grid entirely. So maybe that's why her phone records and bank statements have been cold since her disappearance. And if she lived in one of these communities, she would likely have no need for electronic communication, as these cults do provide food for the members. But they, like I said, limit most outside social interactions. So this brings us to potential sightings of Chelsea since her disappearance. And they haven't been mentioned yet because they are unverified. So, you know, take them with somewhat of a grain of salt here. But while Chelsea was sleeping at that truck stop, it's called Love's, some employees mentioned that they saw her with a Middle Eastern man with a beard and a mustache. She was at Love's for at least 2 days and was observed speaking with and spending time with this unnamed man on both days. And nobody there knew who he was, and none of Chelsea's friends knew anyone who fit that description. Now, unfortunately, the Love's truck stop did not have cameras facing the parking lot, and they also couldn't find footage of her within the store. So we don't know.
That's crazy.
I know.
Love's doesn't have cameras on the exterior? What the hell?
I know. That's frustrating.
That's insane. You would think for such a large establishment like that, with so many people coming through,
you would
and
think
lots of crimes that occur at truck stops,
yeah,
that there would be cameras mm-hmm. on the parking lot.
Also, during the police investigation, some employees had mistaken her for another woman who was staying there who had a cardboard sign with the word Seattle written on it. Regardless, though, it's unclear if we can take their testimony as fact.
Yeah, I would say this is probably pretty unreliable, because if they're confusing it with this other woman, I mean, who knows if they even saw her at all.
Then on the 2nd of October, during the period between when Chelsea spoke to the woodcutters and when her car was found, she was potentially seen in a gray Camry near Prescott Airport. It's Prescott.
Is it Prescott?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I learned that from Hiram, because he used to live there when he was on the sesh. Yeah. Prescott Airport with a man who fit that description. And she was identified by a bearded dragon in her lap. But this is also kind of a sketchy tip, because we don't even know who sent this in.
So is it likely anonymous?
Yeah.
We don't know if this was followed up on and confirmed. So
No. It's frustrating. But then on October 6th, the same day that police identified Chelsea's car, she was potentially seen in a vegan restaurant near Phoenix. Now, this I'd say is probably the most credible tip, if you could say that, out of what we have. While the restaurant's name is undisclosed, the owners themselves actually called in the tip. And they said that Chelsea and an unknown woman with dark hair entered the restaurant and stayed for over an hour. They were both friendly, complimented the food, and said they would be coming back. They said that Chelsea was, quote, hippie-ish, but clean and seemed to be taking care of herself. And the unknown woman was the same, but she was more shy and didn't speak much.
Hmm. Interesting.
And of course, we don't know if this is Chelsea, but it does come. We actually know who this is coming from. Well, I guess we don't know exactly who, but we know it was the owners of this restaurant.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. We don't know for sure that it was her, though.
They also noted that the two were in town for First Friday celebrations and wanted to try the restaurant. The owners took an interest in Chelsea because she had a bearded dragon around her neck. That's a big detail.
Yeah, that is.
How many people are just rolling around with a bearded dragon
wrapped
around their neck? Not many. The owner said they thought it was cool and asked if they could pet it. And they said that they believe Chelsea said yes and mentioned that she wanted to get her out as much as possible because she'd be going into hibernation soon. So that's another key mm-hmm. detail, because we know that was a fact.
Yep.
The owners asked the dragon's name, and Chelsea said Roxy.
Yeah, then, how many bearded dragons out there named Roxy?
So, true.
Yeah, that I don't know. That tip just say most credible out of the ones we have.
So according to the owners, the unnamed woman paid with a card and the two left, and they said they would come back. Obviously, they're like, okay, well, let's look at the receipt, see if we can figure out who this woman was. Well, unfortunately, the restaurant's cameras were not working, and because the woman tapped with her card, her name did not appear on the receipt, which that's weird. I wonder if there must be some point of sale systems that...
Yeah.
I don't think that's all of them, because I do that a lot, and I'm pretty sure like there's still... Maybe not, though, actually. Now that I think about it, maybe not.
Yeah,
maybe you just write a signature. Yeah,
I'll
have to test that theory out, because I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, me either.
However, the police have not publicly investigated this tip further, and it's unclear if they contacted the point of sale company for more in-depth information about the transaction, because I assume you could take the transaction ID, contact the point of sale company, and probably figure out who that person was or whose card it was. But maybe not. I don't know. Chelsea's friends and family, when they were told about this, had no idea who this woman could be.
I was with her, yeah.
Interesting. Chelsea was apparently seen again in a gray Camry near a gas station. A Middle Eastern man with a mustache and beard entered the store while she waited in the car. According to this tip, she did not seem in distress because she sat patiently for 10 minutes, and once again, she had a bearded dragon in her lap. This was the last public sighting of Chelsea. That was called into police, but there is some potential information on who the man could be. An amateur investigator asked the owner of the Aztec Hotel in Seligman who this mystery man was, and he said he was named Prince and ran a radical religious cult that promoted organic grades, which, if you're not familiar, a system where once you die on the ranch, their ranch, a tree is planted above your grave. Apparently, Prince would find drifters, tell them about his ranch, and take them with him without telling any of their friends or family. He would specifically pick people who were suffering from mental health issues or drug addiction and would offer them refuge. But he had done acid while he stayed at the hotel with other members. And according to the hotel owner, another woman who went missing in Arizona was found with the cult in Las Vegas. All of the members had taken hard drugs and been living in the desert for months. We can't verify this claim or even find this cult, but given the nature of this area, there's a good possibility that somebody runs a remote drug cult in the desert.
Yeah, for sure.
However, in doing some digging, we did find a man named Gabriel of Urantia, who calls himself the Prince of this planet.
Oh, God.
He runs an eco-village called Avalon Gardens near Sedona, where members are very restricted in their social interactions and outside activities, and they labor for the community, and they are ultimately controlled by Gabriel.
Now, we actually have a picture of Gabriel.
Give me Rael vibes, if you remember that episode.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Which I can see, I mean, it seems like this is, like he's a white man.
Yeah, with just a white beard. I don't know, though. He, from this angle, he does kind of look.
Maybe he, yeah.
Maybe he's...
But I could see how he could be mistaken as Middle Eastern if he's not.
He's got flowy white hair, the white fluffy beard, and he's got the decorative garments going on.
Yeah.
And it could just been maybe, I mean, again, this is rural Arizona, so you never know how people are going to characterize people like this. So it could be completely off. But I don't know. This guy seems very similar to the description. While this certainly could be a place that would attract Chelsea, it's unlikely that it's the same as the cult leader named by the hotel owner, because there's no mention of drugs and members are expected to sell their belongings, give that money back to the cult. Whereas Chelsea left most of her belongings in her car and in San Diego. And in reality, Gabriel just seems like another UFO religion cult grifter.
Yeah.
He has, his whole cult is very, very interesting. It's a doomsday cult. They stockpile guns. They have this big compound in the middle of nowhere, south of Tucson, it looks like.
Maybe we should do a whole episode on him.
I mean, you could do like a whole podcast that just covers these doomsday UFO cults that occur all over the place. Or
it's wild.
Yeah, it is pretty strange. But because so many similar cults litter the desert near where Chelsea went missing, and many with almost no online presence, because that's the thing with Prince and his whole cult, is it's pretty public. Like, they've got a radio show, he goes on podcasts. So I don't know, like, if she was a part of that, would we have more information on that? Would the authorities have more information on that? I don't know. So we don't know if this individual who, people called in tips on, is actually Prince or not. Maybe a similar figure. As we said earlier, Chelsea's Ford Escape was auctioned for around $10,000. Her belongings, tent, camera, and journals dating back at least 12 years were all discarded. Her family hasn't made any official statements since the initial search, but has told those close to them that they didn't have the capacity to pick up her things. Their PI, Kelly Townsend, is still working the case as far as we know. The Cocosino Police Department said they are searching for Chelsea, but her missing posters have been largely taken down across the area. Those close to the case speculate that they have moved from search and rescue to search and recovery, and think that Chelsea is probably deceased at this point. And the case has primarily gone cold, with no new official leads in nearly 6 months. There haven't been any more potential sightings since December, though this could just be because awareness is so low at this point, because the case is going cold, which is why we're covering it. I mean, to kind of bring it back to people's minds again, because she is still out there, possibly, and possibly still alive. So is it possible she doesn't want to be found? I think so.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's so hard when... It sounds like her family and those closest to the case who were actually on the ground doing the search and rescue and now recovery, it's hard when they think that she is probably dead. I like feel bad speculating that she could still be alive. I don't know exactly how her family feels about that or if there's more information, because that's kind of a big jump. It hasn't been that long.
Yeah, 6 months.
It seems like pretty quick to assume that when there isn't really evidence for it. And like in my mind, I think it's more likely that she's probably out there and possibly could have gotten with one of these groups, just because there are so many of them. And just like her mental state leading up to this, saying she wanted to get off the grid, ditching the SIM card, not wanting, you know, it seemed like she was really disconnecting from a lot of people in her life. I mean, her family, she was kind of pushing back and then wanted to completely get away from this PJ nut.
Well, yeah. And I think that would be a great motivation to want to disappear.
Yeah.
Is to get away from PJ.
And like these types of groups prey on people like that who are in a tough spot in their life, feeling disconnected from their loved ones. So I don't know. To me.
Yeah. I mean, if there's somebody out there offering you refuge from all these troubles in your life and also
spiritual
offering
understanding.
Yeah. Awakening and you know, we can help you get to a better place and we'll bring you into a whole group of other people who are all in the same boat that you are.
And she seemed like such a deep person who would be interested in exploring, not a cult necessarily, but just like the meaning of life and spirituality and just like she seemed to be a deep soul. So, or seems to be. I mean, she very well could be alive, in my opinion. And I hope that's the case, as terrible as a lot of these cults are, most of them. I mean, it's better than the alternative if she is still out there and could possibly still be recovered and rejoin life with her family.
If she wants to.
Yeah, if she wants to. Yeah. I mean, she's
in her 30s now. And
of course,
she...
you have every right to just disappear from your life and start over. And people do it. All the time.
Makes a lot of sense that these groups would be looking for potential new recruits at places like truck stops or rest stops because, you know, maybe they don't want to be public and on the internet and, you know, soliciting members that way in such a public setting. And so what better way to look for potential new members or recruits for your group than to go to a Love's truck stop and just like, keep an eye out for anybody that looks like they're nomadic or living out of their vehicle or seem to be distressed or, you know, asking questions. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. So in my mind, the way that I see this kind of playing out just from looking and hearing everything is I don't think this was the original plan when she set out necessarily.
I don't either.
I think a series of events happened and
especially in those first 3 days.
Yeah. And her one possibility is she did go to that truck stop and she camped there. She met somebody, you know, maybe they came back with her to her vehicle and then she left with them. That's the hard thing is like, we don't know the series of events from that traffic stop by that police officer to, you know, when her car's finally found by police. Like, we don't know exactly how the events played out and at what point she actually left her vehicle or left Love's truck stop, or if she even went to the truck stop at all.
Yeah,
we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
So that's the tough thing, because I'm like, she did go to Arizona a lot. She did meet people in these wilderness camps. Could she have met somebody who had a connection to a group like this, or maybe she somehow contacted when she got to the truck stop, she called them and then they came and got her. I mean, it's really hard to say. Or what, you know, or was it just totally random and she just ran into somebody who was recruiting at the truck stop and was like, hey, you know, you want to come check out this place? In order to do that, here's what we need you to do. And then she proceeded to, you know, pop the tires on her vehicle and then leave it there. I mean, there's endless possibilities.
Yeah, so many possibilities. Or she didn't even pop them herself, that they were just naturally
popped. Or they were just naturally popped. And so she was freaking out. And then just like, how'd she get some? And then she took off on foot, walked somewhere or got picked up by somebody, then driven somewhere. I mean, there's just so many things that could have happened.
And I guess in a way, it's sort of wishful thinking. I mean, I do think there's quite a good chance that she could be out there in one of these cults or communes or whatever. But it's obviously better than the alternative. And so my mind doesn't want to go to foul play or human trafficking, God forbid, or something horrible like that. It's more comfortable to think of the alternatives. You know?
Yeah, but I think what the authorities would say if we were to ask them, be like, yeah, that's a possibility, but unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And
about the her joining a group? Or
yeah, joining a group, yeah.
Yeah, well, because they also say no to foul play, though. So what? I don't understand.
I don't know. You would think there'd be more evidence, but there are all sorts of organized crime groups operating in Arizona. I mean, you've got, you know, groups coming across the border. There's tons of human smuggling down there.
Mm-hmm. And truck stops are kind of a hotspot for that as well.
Yeah. So
that's terrible to think about.
So she really could be anywhere by now. We have no idea.
Well, it's still an open case. So let's hope that there's more information that just isn't being shared with the public.
Yeah. If you do have any information, though,
yes,
regarding the whereabouts of Chelsea Grimm, you can contact the Cococino Sheriff's Office at 928-774-4523. I'm sure they'd love to get some fresh tips, credible ones.
Yeah. I really feel for her loved ones, her friends.
No matter what, this is really tough to not know where your child is.
No.
I mean, I can't even imagine how that must feel.
Just terrible. Just to have all these possibilities, especially in a case like this when there are so many options, so many really all of them for the most part are terrible theories, and that would just be so hard to grapple with every day. And I don't really know how you go on continuing to live your life just not knowing what happened. Just horrible.
Yeah. All I hope is that she is alive and okay. I mean, I hope she's happy if she is out there, and you know, hopefully one day she can give her loved ones a call or contact them in some way to let them know she's okay.
Or if she is stuck somewhere.
Or if she is stuck somewhere, as we've learned from all these other cults out there, like Love is Juan out near Crestone.
Yep.
You know,
you're like,
people
totally
left their families and they had no idea where they were. And then years went by and then they reappeared. So
when they finally felt like they could.
Yeah. This is still luckily not too far, you know, as far as time passing, 6 months. So I'm hopeful that in the future there'll be updates on this case.
Yeah, me too.
And we'll know more, but
that is all we have as of right now.
Yeah, until then, we just keep her name out there and
photo,
making people aware of her story. So.
Yeah, definitely. If you're able to, you know, share a picture of her information, her flyer on social media, or you could share this episode or another, you know, some other coverage on her. That would be super helpful and appreciated by their family for sure.
But
and of course, we want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah,
you guys always have so many interesting theories. And if you're listening, you can go over to our Instagram account, which is at Mile Higher Pod, and leave us comments there with your theories, or you can drop them in the YouTube comment section. You guys always have some really interesting thoughts, sometimes things that we haven't even thought about. But yeah, unfortunately, that is all we have at this point.
We'll catch you guys next time with another one.
Until then, keep on taking your mind a mile higher.